I'd like to call the City Council meeting of September the 12th to order, please. I'd like to call for a moment of silence, please. If we could stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Just a bit of housekeeping. If everyone could turn off any electronic devices they have, we would appreciate it. Roll call, please.
Charlie Hawkins.
Here.
Dennis Olison.
Here.
Harry Robinson.
Here.
Steve Lawrenson.
Here.
Mary Lou Stewart.
Here.
Paul Greeno.
Here.
Bonnie Onion requested to be excused.
I'll entertain a motion for her to be excused.
I so move.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any comments or questions? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Motion is carried 6-0. Next item on our agenda is audience participation. First is an introduction of Kathy Sitker, who is going to be the Senior Center Director.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to thank Councilman Dennis Olison for attending and sitting in on our Blaine Senior Center Director hiring process, lending his expertise and helping recruit the best possible person to lead our organization. And tonight, I'm very pleased to introduce to you Kathy Sitker. We're delighted she has accepted the position as Director of our Blaine Senior Center. She comes to us with an excellent record of experience and skills, including her last 4 years have been spent as the Executive Director of the Alzheimer's Society of the State of Washington, located in Bellingham. And prior to that, she was the owner-operator of a 60-seat restaurant called Diego's Mexican Grill for 15 years. And before coming to Washington, Kathy was a legal secretary in California. So, Council, thank you for allowing us to take the time to introduce Kathy. And, Kathy, would you please come up and meet
thank
the
you.
Blaine Senior Center? Or, Blaine Senior Center, Blaine City Council.
We all.
Hi. Yeah. I just want to say thank you so much, and I want to say thank you to my board of directors for hiring me. Dennis, I really appreciate it. This is a real opportunity for me, and I'm very, very thrilled. With the Alzheimer's Society of Washington, which was a local nonprofit 34 years here in Whatcom County, we did 16 support groups throughout the county. So my passion, because of my parents having the disease, my mother had Lewy body dementia, my father had Alzheimer's, it was very important to me. And I had served on their board of directors. I saw the need in the community. And one thing I used to talk about when I would do networking, I networked all over the county, was saying that baby boomers started turning 65 in 2011, and there's a silver tsunami, which there is. And it's just not, I realize, for Alzheimer's. It's for the seniors. We're all living longer. So I hope to bring into Blaine Senior Center, as the new director, a different direction. I want to see younger people coming. I want to see it grow and become the center for seniors that it should be. I'm 62. I'm a baby boomer. I'm at the young age of it. But I have friends that say, you're at a senior center. I said, you have no idea how exciting and fun it is. I enjoy every day of it. I'm pleased to be here. I hope I have your support. Whatever you need from me, I'm there for you. I also was involved with the state Alzheimer's disease working group. I worked down in Olympia once a month. I would go down. Obama, 3-4 years ago, had passed a law that all the states had to come up with their state plan. So the state, our state, was coming up with the plan. I was working on it. I was on the public relations committee. And I have to tell you, with Alzheimer's, there was a stigma. It's a stigma about that disease, and it has to stop. And I also believe that there is a stigma about aging. And aging, you know, we're coming into the best years of our lives. We really are. And I'm just thrilled to be here and hope I can do the best job that I can. So thank you so much for the opportunity and the chance, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome, Kathy. Okay, next up is Debbie Farmer from the Lane Library, and she has some exciting news for us, I believe.
We do. Happy National Library Card Month to you all. Here's Joe Cool. He's our mascot. Got the t-shirt and a whole bit. Thank you for squeezing me in tonight. I did want to draw attention to this. I also wanted to point out the fact that the library system, Whatcom County Library System, has published their new fall explorations booklet that lists all of the different programs that are happening throughout the county. This time they have color-coded the programs so that you can tell. As you're going through the pages, you can look for that little orange BL for Blaine. Of course, we're drawing people from all areas of the county to our programs. And I have to say that I think last year we had 456 programs at the Blaine Library alone. So we need to communicate that to Roger Brooks. Anyway, there's also a wealth of information about what's going on in the library otherwise in this book. The other thing I wanted to mention to you is I would like to show you about the Book Brain Challenge. This is a new marketing campaign that the library is doing starting last week, and it is promoting everyone in Whatcom County to get a library card. Only about half of the households in Whatcom County actually have public library cards, and we'd like to see that change. People's taxes are paying for the libraries, and so there is a wealth of resources that we'd love to see them using, including a lot of new digital materials. I just thought I'd show you a couple Book Brain Challenge clips to get your heads kind of thinking about what you are going to do to challenge your friends with a book on your head.
Today to promote the Whatcom County Library System with the Book Brain Challenge. As the mayor of the city of Linden, I am very proud of our exceptional library system in Linden and in Whatcom County. I know that my wife took our grandkids to the terrific weekly toddler story time. And this summer, my grandson even made a contraption on the free 3D printer. The sad thing is that only half of our community has a library card, and it only takes 2 minutes to register online for a card. And I know it takes a lot longer than me to mow my lawn in 2 minutes. So I'm a busy man, and I need to multitask. And I will balance my book, The Essential American, and mow, and watch my back for where you can register today. And so I nominate Gary Bodie, Executive Jack Louse, and Mayor Kelly Linville to take up the challenge and record their own video in the next 24 hours. And thanks for watching. And be sure to register for a card today.
You can register online at wcls.org. It takes 2 minutes. See, Harry, I think you can do better than that.
Thank you. right next to the Blaine Police Department, and I would like Officer Jake to show us what it's like to be arrested.
All right, go ahead and put your hands here in the back.
I'm being cuffed. Zip tied. I guess I couldn't hold the book on my head with the handcuffs. I'm going to have to really balance this.
All right, why don't we sit in the back seat of the car here?
Okay. I'm cooperative.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Do you have any questions?
No, thank you for making our life more enjoyable.
I want to know why Debbie didn't. You didn't.
I didn't. But I didn't want to take your time.
Oh, okay.
I was shelling a crab with a book on my head.
Thanks again, Debbie. Okay, next item on the agenda is written communications. Do we have any?
We received an email dated September 3rd from Colleen Marie regarding the Blaine Senior Center Board of Directors, an email dated September 7th from Brownlee Wolf and Lee regarding zoning text amendment ZTA-3-16, an email dated September 11th from Wendy Harris regarding the rezone of the Gateway District, and an email dated September 12th from Simi Jane regarding 9725 Vista Terrace, ULID 35.
Thank you. Next item is our consent agenda, approval of bills in the amount of $578,022.66, approval of payroll in the amount of $536,436.19, and approval of the council minutes for August the 22nd, 2016.
So moved.
Second it.
Motion has been made and second. Are there any questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed say nay. Hearing none, the motion is carried 6-0. Next item on our agenda is council action items. And we're going to change the agenda. Number 7 will become number 1. Mr. Sitkin always wants to be number 1, so we've agreed to grant him that this evening. He's going to talk about the WRI interlocal agreement.
Thank you, council members, and really I wanted to introduce this. I have some background with this interlocal agreement. It's being presented tonight to the Blaine City Council, tomorrow night to the County Council, Leverson City Council tomorrow, and other entities in this week and next. If you had any questions about the interlocal, we thought I would have some background for you. It is pretty straightforward, though, I would say. Water resource inventory areas consist of the Nooksack River, the Dakota California Creek drainages, Lake Whatcom, and the related drainages in coastal areas. The joint board that you'll see there is the essentially comprises Bellingham, the largest utility in the county, which is the PUD, the Whatcom County, and they're charged with watershed planning and working with the planning unit, which is the creation of those initiating governments, the joint board, which does also include the tribes, and are tasked with watershed management planning and water resource planning in the county. Very cursory, there's a lot of nuance there, but I don't want to get into all the subtle details. There's also the Salmon Recovery Board, which is also a creature statute that's created that you as land use managers as a city are involved with, and the technical side other entities are. And this is an effort to bring those two boards together to work on the watershed recovery plan management project in the county. It's covering water planning and a framework for planning and addressing the water quality, water quantity, in-stream flow plans, fish habitat, those type of issues. Included with that is shellfish populations, salmon populations. This is really a planning process to develop plans, build the framework, potentially develop technical information as background, as it may attempt to guide some resolutions on those issues for all the entities as you go forward. This is a consolidation of those two boards, which is really what this interlocal is. Blaine would be involved, as with all the other cities. I might have some recommendations in the administration of how they staff or manage it, but I don't think it's going to be a significant commitment on the city of Blaine's part, and there's no financial obligation related to this proposal that is material, at least on the face of what your obligations are here, other than staff. If there's no questions, I'd recommend approval.
Questions? Anyone have questions for John? Okay. Hearing none. Thank you, John. Okay. We're being requested to approve the interlocal agreement for the establishment of a new WRIA-1 Watershed Management Board.
So move.
Second.
The motion has been made and seconded. Are there any other questions or comments? Yes, Dennis.
Is there a time frame for these groups to then start meeting, or where are we on that?
Those boards have been meeting for a number of years separately, and they have been meeting together at times. I think tomorrow there is a meeting of the two boards. And so this is really a process of structurally consolidating the two boards.
Okay. Further questions? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Hearing none, the motion is carried 6-0. Next item on our council action items is the memorandum of agreement. No, excuse me. We're going to go back to number one. Number one is the ordinance 16-2889, Title 17, Gas Station Code Amendment. Mr. Jones, are you going to introduce that?
Yes.
One slight correction on that this is an amendment to Title 15. I think the agenda has an error there when you mentioned Title 17. But otherwise, everything else there is correct. This is gasoline service stations, and the ordinance number is correct. This is a proposal that was submitted by a private citizen for a change to our code in Title 15, which is the section related to building regulations, so the building code is adopted in that section. So it's that type of regulation. It's not actually zoning per se, but it is related to land development and oversight. It would have the effect of changing an existing separation distance of 300 feet and reducing it to 200 feet. That is a separation of different kinds of uses, gas stations, from certain sensitive uses that are listed in our code. And it would apply only to the gateway zoning district, so it wouldn't be related to gas stations that are in other commercial zones or elsewhere in the city. The gateway district is that area that's highlighted in kind of a purplish color there, that section there in blue. And it is located east of SR 543. It extends from East Street south to Pipeline Road. The boundary on the east side is variable, but it basically is easy to define from that section from East Street south to Pipeline Road and on the east side of SR 543. The old airport's located in that site. The Yorkston's truck stop is in that site. Some manufacturing businesses, Skalman Park, and also the city's public works facility. A little bit of a closer view of that is here. And there are basically three of the so-called sensitive uses that affect that gateway district. One is the school campus, one is Lincoln Park, and one is Skalman Park. And there are some images of how those buffers apply in those areas, I think, in your staff report that are in your packet from the Planning Commission staff report that show that in a little bit more detail. The 300-foot buffer would change to 200 feet with this proposal. The process on this, as I mentioned, it was proposed by a private individual. It went through a SEPA review, an environmental review. After relying upon information from the engineer's report and comparing this to the International Fire Code and the kind of standards that are adopted kind of worldwide in a sense, we released a determination of non-significance, indicating no substantial effect as a result of this. There was a public notice, of course, as it had a public hearing at the Planning Commission. We did consult with the superintendent of schools directly to see if there were concerns or if he had any comments. He did not provide us with any comments, didn't express any concerns related to the proposal. And the Planning Commission reviewed the project. Their considerations were primarily around the International Fire Code and the Building Code. What are the standards? What are the other standards that are used across the nation and in other places besides here? The separation distance in the fire code is substantially less than the 300 feet. 50 feet is typical. And there are different types of uses. It's not so much the uses that are around you, but the distance are based upon the type of fuel that you're storing, the amount of fuel, and how it's stored. But in any case, we exceed that significantly. They did consider public safety and risk, and they also considered economic development and the effects that these buffers would have on the surrounding land uses. The Planning Commission's recommendation after consideration was to approve the proposal and to reduce the separation distance from 300 feet to 200 feet for service stations, gasoline service stations in the Gateway Zoning District. That would be by approving Ordinance 162889. Any questions for me? I would mention, actually, I meant to say this as I got started, you did have two items that were in your written communication today. Those should really not be considered part of the record. Those were received after the close of the public hearing. If you do want to enter those into the record, you could hold a public hearing, and those could be submitted, and you could consider them. Otherwise, I would ask you to disregard that. There is the information developed from the public hearing and the other process where people had an opportunity to comment through the public setting. Any questions for me?
So, Michael, the letter that we received in our box today was not presented at the public hearing.
That's correct.
But it could be part of the record if the council decided to hold a public hearing.
Right. This is a legislative item. It's not a development project. So you can actually hold multiple public hearings for a legislative item. So you could decide to hold a public hearing. It's just that no one was notified of that. So you would need to, I guess, make that decision tonight, probably hold it at the next regular meeting. That would be then notified in the normal channels, and the two letters that were received could be entered into the record, and then any other testimony that anyone wanted to provide.
Paul?
Two questions, if I may. One, you did say there was a public hearing held by the Planning Commission?
Yes.
Thank you. Two, is the fuel in question stored above ground or underground?
No, all gasoline service stations store their gasoline below ground. Some of them do have propane tanks above ground for filling propane, but the majority of the fuel that they handle is all below ground.
And third, if I could sneak a second, third question in, you mentioned the International Fire Safety Code. Did you by chance pull cities within the state of Washington to see what their requirements might be?
We looked more regionally, not across the state of Washington, but there are some local cities that have a code somewhat similar to this and others that have nothing related to this and just rely on the standard setbacks in the fire code. And that's actually in the staff report to the Planning Commission. There's a table related to that.
Okay, can you give me a quick synopsis so I don't have to
Sure. Linden has a similar clause of no service station shall be less than 300 feet from a park, playground, school, church, or place of assembly. So theirs is actually very, very close to what ours is. Ferndale has a different one. Theirs is that they can be no closer than 500 feet to an intersection. That has more to do with traffic control. And then no service station can be located closer than 250 feet to a residential zone, church, library, school, some of those same uses. The uses vary. The lists are not exactly city to city the same. Sumas does not have a similar proposal, and Bellingham does not have a similar code section.
Thank you.
Yes, Dennis.
The setback is from the school property is what I understand.
Right. It's bad when I say it's a setback because that has a specific meaning, and it is a separation, but yes, from the school property. So it's from the edge of the property of the school or the edge of the property of the park or the church or whatever it happens to be, measured outward 300 feet. And so the effect that that has on the Gateway District is pretty substantial because there's a long strip all along where Yorkston's truck stop is, and then Skalman Park, as you can imagine, has a buffer all the way around it, but that's in the airport, the old airport site and mostly public works and some surrounding businesses.
So the S-543 mm-hmm. is included in that distance?
It's in the separation distance, so that basically SR 543 is about 200 feet wide.
So the actual setback for the building of a gasoline station, even if it was at 300 feet, it would be 100 feet back from?
Right, it would be 100 feet back from the
east edge of the highway.
Right. From the edge of the highway, but it's important to recognize it's the whole facility, so that it's not like the fuel tank has to be 300 feet or has to be 100 feet or a specific aspect of it. It is the gas station, the whole property,
and the location is to the intersections. You have one on Boblett already on the south side of Boblett.
Yeah, that one's non-conforming.
And if you have one proposed on the north side, then is there a question or a problem with the amount of traffic getting in and out of there for the two stations?
Well, that would be reviewed if there were a proposal. And yeah. Our code has a specific set of items that need to be reviewed. One of them is that they have to provide a traffic study and a traffic movement plan. There's a whole list of items in our code related to gas station locating. I do believe if the Yorkstons actually were to move forward and build a gas station, if this were approved, they intend to close the one across the street and have a deed restriction so that there wouldn't be able to be a competing gas station across the street from them on their old site. So there wouldn't be two. There'd probably be one. But nonetheless, there's an analysis of that to check and make sure it all works.
Is the gas station that's on the north side of 8th Street, is that inside the 300 feet or outside of the 300 feet, or is it?
It's outside of 300 feet of both the parks, buffer and the school's buffer, but only by a little bit, especially a very little bit, from the direction of the park. It's about 400 feet from the school property.
Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome.
Michael, did I hear correctly that an individual brought this forward?
Yes.
Not the gas station itself?
Well, that would be the individual. So what I mean is it wasn't staff proposed, it wasn't proposed by the Planning Commission, it wasn't proposed by council, it was proposed by a citizen. So it was Heather Wolf on behalf of the Yorkston Corporation.
So am I correct in saying Yorkston are the ones that applied for it?
Yes.
Thank you. Yes, Dennis.
Michael, the area we're talking about is only the gateway zoning.
Right. What they have proposed, what they've applied for, is to change that clause only for the gateway zoning district. So it would still apply in other zoning districts.
Do we have any other areas where that could be the case?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Is there any area in town where we have gasoline stations that would be affected if there was a change in the...
No, well, if this change is made, of course, it only applies in the Gateway District. So the only gas stations are the ones that you've already mentioned. Those two, I guess, actually, there's the Shell station, but that's not close enough to any of those. Well, actually, the park, but it's not in the Gateway Zoning District. And there are a number of other uses like that gas station. We didn't do the analysis, but it may be close enough to Lincoln Park. That it's within the buffer, but it's a pre-existing use. The Hill Chevron here is likely to be located within the 300-foot buffer of one of those sensitive uses. We didn't do the analysis for all the other gas stations because they're not a part of the proposal.
Michael, how long has the 300 feet been in play? Is that something that we did a long, long time ago, or is it something that is recent?
It looks like it was created in 1990. Okay. And then it was amended in 2009, but we discussed that internally in the office, and between Alex and I, we were pretty sure that we didn't make any amendments to anything related to this in 2009, but in 1990 is when 1530 was created. I have a feeling that if you go back in time to 1990, and some of you would know much better than I do, that was probably a time when there was a flurry of gas station either openings or closings. And it was probably done in response to that, where gas stations were locating right across the street from each other. They were popping up all over the place. I mean, D Street is a great example where there's a whole bunch of gas stations or old gas station sites all together. That has an adverse effect on the fabric of the community, is the way the planner would say it. Because it just changes things, and it causes a lot of traffic flow issues and that sort of thing. And there's some uses just ought to be spaced out from each other. Probably came into effect then.
Dennis. Michael, would this also affect any new construction that might come in the gateway area that they were somehow limited by where they could put their buildings because of the, if they fit into a, I don't know what you would call it, the school district type?
No, it's kind of an inverse relationship. The gas station can't locate itself within a certain distance of those sensitive uses. It's highly unlikely, based upon the existing code, that any of those sensitive uses would locate within the Gateway District. But theoretically, let's just say, it's not permitted in the zone, so it's a bad example. But if a church wanted to be located in the old airport property, that wouldn't suddenly create a buffer all around it and make the gas stations illegal, but it would have the effect of a new gas station moving in next door to not being possible. So it's a little bit like the discussion we had related to buffering or separation distance for marijuana facilities. Mm-hmm. A daycare center that chooses to move in next door to a marijuana retailer doesn't suddenly make the marijuana retailer illegal. That was their choice to move next door. So it's kind of, it only works one way.
But I was thinking that with the what's allowed to be constructed in Gateway, are there any things such as a medical facility that could be impacted?
There are. Yeah, there are. There are things that could be affected by a gas station, but not things that could be affected per se by this code. However, a medical facility is not one of our sensitive uses. The International Fire Code treats it as such because it's difficult to evacuate. It takes time, right? People that are hooked up on IVs and stuff don't just get up and run for the door. And so those uses are considered in the International Fire Code in a certain way. Those are not considered by our code in that way. So they are not covered by this clause. However, yeah, if a gas station were located there would be some spacing, some separation distances. But it's also building to building in those instances. It's not property line to property line. Because this is like a terrible case scenario, right, making up all sorts of possibilities. But if a gas station were to catch on fire and start burning, the cars in the parking lot of the hospital really are not important. It's the hospital building, which may be hundreds and hundreds of feet further inland. And so that's how the International Fire Code works.
Okay.
It talks about the actual people, the actual uses.
Is it appropriate then for us to consider changing the code at some point in the future to include things like hospital?
It could be, but honestly, I would say that the experts that put together the International Fire Code and the International Building Code tend to be better at this than we would be, a small city that doesn't have that level of expertise. So we have adopted the International Fire Code already, so we're using their standards, but to create our own just kind of makes it look like we're going to try to do something better, and we may not really have that expertise.
Gotcha. Okay, here we are. Yes, Dennis.
But does the International Fire Code say, well, you only have to be 50 feet?
The International Fire Code separation takes into account what types of uses there are, what specific sensitive uses there are, and what types of fuel and volumes of fuel you are storing. And I believe we have the engineer put together the report that was part of this packet that can answer those questions in more detail than I can, if you have questions for him.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I understand what the International Fire Code is saying and what we're proposing.
Dennis, do you want to ask the expert? Or?
I think it would be nice if we could get a clarification.
Right.
My name is Brian Thompson with Aegis Engineering. I'm a fire protection engineer in the state of Washington. I have about 20 years of experience working in the fire service and as a fire protection engineer and a civil engineer. I've worked with the state fire code Council on state amendments of the building code. I work with the state building code council on state building code amendments, and I'm happy to entertain whatever questions you have with regard to this matter.
I just want to know what would be the minimum distance that the fire code would allow.
Zero. If you have a tank underground in a vault, zero.
So depending on what the storage system is.
Correct. Yeah, and like Mike said, volume.
Okay. So the 200 feet that is being proposed in your mind is?
Yeah, we identify 200 feet as a number consistent with 1 million gallons of above ground storage, or what you'd see at a bulk transfer wharf at an entrance to a tunnel, a place where there's a limited ingress and egress. So 200 feet is a very conservative number that the fire code does have as a prescriptive requirement.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, the Planning Commission recommends approval by adoption of Ordinance 16-2889, amending Chapter 15.30, Gasoline Service Stations, to reduce the setback in the Gateway Zoning District.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and second. Any other comments or questions? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed say nay. Hearing none, the motion is carried 6-0. The next item on our agenda is a memorandum of agreement with the Opportunity Council for low-income weatherizing program.
Well, good evening. I'm very excited to announce the start of a partnership with both the Opportunity Council and our continued partnership with the PUD. So it's the next two items on your agenda. So to start with the Opportunity Council, they currently provide, thank you, Michael's passing around some of their brochures. They currently provide quite a bit of service to Whatcom County. I actually included in your packet a copy of their 2015 report, which highlights 50 years of service, providing social services to our community. They provide everything from preschool, child care, income, job schools, health care access, homeless housing, community service referrals, and weatherization programs. In conversations with Bonneville Power over the last several years doing our energy efficiency programs, we've talked repeatedly about, boy, wouldn't it be great to bring weatherization up to Blaine? Wouldn't it be great? Because they cover that very generously. And we have such a great resource here already in Whatcom County, a firm that already does that, a nonprofit, in fact. And so what we're proposing here is that Whatcom Opportunity Council will be the contractor for the service. They're the ones that would be, with our referrals, meeting with the citizens, scheduling a time to do an assessment of the home. They would be contracting the work, doing the work, doing the quality assurance inspection, and essentially providing us then the paperwork we need to do the administration with Bonneville Power. So for really a very small administrative task added to Public Works, we are adding a very important, in my opinion, component of energy efficiency and targeting a portion of our community that needs it the most, the low-income folks in Blaine. So as I indicated in the request for council action, there's more than 270 households in Blaine which currently qualify for our low-income reduced utility rate. The criteria are slightly different. John Davies, actually, with the Opportunity Council is here if you have questions, but their criteria are a little bit different, but we would at least start with what we have identified and hopefully start seeing this program grow. So we're going to start small. We can kind of call it our, you know, we only have 1 year left in the Bonneville Powers biennium. So we decided to try kicking this off for a year. Conversations we have with the Opportunity Council, as they see it as a community where they feel there's opportunity to see this program grow. And similarly, as I will communicate shortly, the PUD, number one, is very interested in also seeing this be an ongoing program. So with that, I open it up to questions. I should point out there's really no budget implications here. In fact, you could say, well, what about that public works time? Are we, you know, getting support for that? We actually get, they call them incentive payments for any rebate project. And historically, while we have sometimes included that as part of our light fund budget, most recently, I'd say the last 3 years anyway, we've put that money back into the program so we can help more households. So really, very little other than staff time in terms of an impact, and we just think this is a win-win-win, and we're really looking forward to it.
Thank you, Raven. Questions for Raven?
You're starting with a fee number. How is that going to be determined? Who's going to be chosen, and what are the criteria for the first people chosen of these low-rent, 270 low-renters?
Sure. So, you know, and I open it up to you, John, if you have anything different to add, but I would think that we're going to first kick off an announcement, and I'm sure Certainly. And I want to clarify, so tonight, if you approve this for the Opportune Council and your subsequent agenda item with the PUD, the PUD's board doesn't meet to tomorrow. So I don't want to say this is going to be the big announcement. I'd love it for it to be tonight, but, you know, we can't schedule meetings always the way we want to. But we do have a press release that we're working on together. We're going to issue announcing this. So we expect we're going to get some calls just out of that. And then secondly, we would send out a notice to those folks and ask them if they're interested to contact us. That would be how I would start. They have their very own way of doing things, I suspect.
Sure. My name is John Davies. I'm the director of the Home Improvement Department at the Opportunity Council. Like Raven mentioned, we deliver the weatherization program in Whatcom Island and San Juan counties. We weatherize about 100 and 120 houses a year. The cost of those projects range from about $8,000 on the low end to $12,000 on the high end. We save about $400 to $600 annually on the utility bills after our work is completed. You asked the question, how do we do our prioritization, I think? And our priority groups for delivering our low-income weatherization program are for the elderly, young families with young children, and households where someone in the home has a disability.
Other questions?
Do the individuals that receive the help, do they have to be the homeowner?
No. That's one of the things that's really wonderful about this.
So they could be in a rental?
Yes, sir.
Are we limited to 5 or 6?
Well,
I assume you do 100 and you have a magic number, John, for the year. Is that
we chose
controlled
that
by budget?
We chose that, Mr. Mayor, and really to not wanting to overcommit the PUD, to kind of get a flavor for the interest here in Blaine. And I think, you know, we also don't want to take away from other folks in Walker County. So it's kind of a balance. They thought that 5 to 6 in the first year was a good number, and if we're just overwhelmed with responsible, we'll visit it at that time.
Okay.
I'd add that our funding comes from the federal government and the state government, but as you probably have heard and know, those fundings and budgets have been going down steadily over the last decade. And so in order to deliver the program at the level we'd like to, we count on a partnership with the investor-owned utilities, Puget Sound Energy, Cascade Natural Gas, the co-op out in the San Juans. And really it's developing a partnership with the PUD here in Blaine and BPA. Raven mentioned there's a dollar-for-dollar reimbursement by Bonneville Power to the utility district for this work. And there's some credits given to the, I don't know if they go to you or to the PUD, but they really make the, Bonneville Power is very interested in the municipals getting on board with energy efficiency programs. And so they're basically saying, we're going to fund them if you guys will deliver them. You know, if you will find the people, we'll help get the service out the door.
Any other questions? Okay, what we're being requested is to authorize the city manager to sign the memorandum of agreement for the Opportunity Council to act as our contractor for this weatherization program.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Hearing none, the motion is carried 7-0. The next item on our agenda is the interlocal agreement amendment number 4 to Exhibit C with Whatcom Public Utility District number 1 of Whatcom County for low income weatherization program.
So this looks pretty familiar. Except a little bit less attachments anyway. So we have been working cooperatively with the Public Utility District as a major power provider in our county. They're also one of the utilities that buys their power wholesale from Bonneville. And as a result, because those energy efficiency budgeted dollars are essentially a portion of what is sold, because they sell a lot, they provide power to a couple of the larger industries, Phillips 66 and BP. Those dollars are sitting there, and they actually asked me to clarify that those dollars are actually Bonneville Power allocated budget. So we're essentially getting a budget authority transfer. We're not actually getting physical dollars from them, so I wanted to clarify that. But essentially that just to not necessarily ask them for a blank check, but and not ask them to fund a specific project, but to actually ask them to help fund a program is new. Previously, before, it would be more project specific. So. They're very excited. Like I said, their board, while they've officially been notified and seem to be in agreement, they will not be making their decision until tomorrow morning. But we anticipate that they will be, that their board will approve it, and that they would like to see this program also kick off. They've agreed to the $50,000 number, which is, you know, it's just floating out there as an estimation of that $8,000 to $12,000 that John was referring to. So don't really have a whole lot to say other than that this is something that we have done in the past, but not on this level. And so I'm particularly excited about it because it expands something that we've been very active in doing, but in a way that I think is going to really help our community.
We are being requested to authorize the city manager to sign the interlocal agreement amendment number 4 to Exhibit C with Whatcom Public Utility District number 1 for this low income weatherization program.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and second. Are there questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Hearing none, the motion is carried 6-0. Next item on our agenda is Resolution 1691-16, renaming Tract A of the Drayton Reach Subdivision and adjacent greenways to Herons Pond. Alex?
Good evening, Council. The resolution, this first resolution before you this evening, is to essentially rename that section of land down there. The city purchased that property, Tract A, from Drayton Reach Subdivision, and Whatcom County Housing, the owners of that property at the time, about a year ago. And the adjacent rights-of-ways have been developed, the trails and signage. So our Parks Board felt that to promote this area, they wanted to give it a separate name. When the city purchased it, it was the intent that we brought into the Montfort Park wetland complex. Just over on the other side of Dodd Street here is Montfort Park, which extends down to the water. So this parkland on this side of Dodd Street here is being proposed to be named as Herons Pond. And there's a very nice wetland feature pond in there that is frequented by Great Blue Heron. So the Parks Board just felt that was a nice name, and that is the proposal for before you this evening. I'm happy to answer any questions about that.
Questions for Alec? Okay. The Park and Cemetery Board recommends approval of Resolution 1691-16, renaming Tract A of the Drayton Reach subdivision and adjacent greenways to Heron's Pond.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Are there questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried 6-0. Next item on our agenda is Resolution 1692-16, renaming Skullman Park to Skullman Dog Park. Alex, you get that one too?
Yes, sir. Well, very similar to the last one, this one is a proposal to rename the park. Resolution 1692-16. Skullman Park, though, has been around for quite a bit longer. It's named after Travis Skullman, the former City of Blaine Public Works Director, actually. And Mr. Skullman built the park there on city land with city resources, and it's been named after him for a number of decades now. I want to say about 7-8 years ago, the City Council granted the Grateful Dogs Off-Leash Association permission to use Skullman Park and fence it in and turn it into an off-leash dog facility. And essentially most of the park is being used for that purpose today. It's our only fenced-in off-leash dog facility. Lincoln Park was also designated as an off-leash dog facility, but there's no fences there, so it's just basically voice control. So Skullman Park, we would like to get some new signage installed, and the Parks Board was approached from a citizen about that. And we really wanted to find a way to better promote the use of the park as a dog park, because a lot of residents even don't know about it today. So the Parks Board talked a lot about it. There was actually a newspaper article printed in the Northern Light. I did receive a call from a woman that claimed to be, I think, the daughter or the granddaughter of Mr. Skullman, and she was not in favor of renaming the park. I just want you to know. She basically said Mr. Skullman didn't necessarily even like dogs very much. But
I was going to say
that was the only comment that we did receive on it. Our Park and Cemetery Board, discussed this in open public meetings. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions or talk more about this with you.
Any questions for Alec?
Alex, that was the concern I had when I saw this. And I've been around here a few years. And I guess I have a problem with sticking dog after somebody's name at that point. And I don't see why the name can't stay the same and just the signage is such that this is an off-leash area.
Well, it could say that. We just thought about, what that would look like on a big sign. Skullman Park, Grateful Dogs Off-Leash Facility is kind of a lot to fit on a sign. But there's no reason why we couldn't do that. And so basically it came down to a marketing
as scenario. Is, I wouldn't be in favor of it.
And this is why we wanted to bring this forward before, of course, we purchased that sign.
Alex, I have a question for you from Paul.
Alex, did Mr. Skullman ever own this particular piece of land?
No, it was owned by the city, sir.
And so perhaps our choice would be, if Mr. Skullman's descendants don't want to have the name changed to Skullman Dog Park, we could change it to the Lane Dog Park.
That could be done, sir, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions or comments? Okay. Park and Cemetery Board recommends Council approve Resolution 1692-16 to rename Skullman Park to Skullman Dog Park.
So moved.
So the resolution has been made. Motion has been made. Do we have a seconder? No seconder. That one just dies.
All right.
Okay. Ordinance 16-2890, amendments to Title 12.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I will be fielding this one as well. So this is a change to the municipal code, a proposed change to the municipal code that would essentially allow camping, recreational fires, and the consumption of alcohol in city parks under a special event permit only. Normally these things are outright permitted at all times, but these proposed code amendments would allow for those under the special circumstances of a special event permit. Our Park and Cemetery Board did discuss this proposal as well, and we wanted to promote, festivities in the park. We thought that would increase the usage in the park, have these events in there. The city's been approached in the past about having these events in the parks, and they've had to work around those existing rules that we have in place today. We have allowed camping in Marine Park several times, and so when we went through this code, we thought that was probably a good idea to change that language in our code, because it has been our policy to allow camping. So with that, there's really not a whole lot to it, except for to allow those three uses of the park under a special event permit. I would add that there is no fee for a special event permit. They can just apply. It's a one-page application that can be issued by the city manager or his designee. We, as park staff, we do a thorough job, reviewing those applications to make sure there's garbage recycling and cleanup plans, and that there's any damage to the park gets repaired, and typical things like that. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Dennis, and then I'll come to Mary.
This would include Lincoln Park?
This is all the parks in the city.
I have trouble with the way Lincoln Park is right now, that it's even in that grouping.
It has to be a permit.
Yeah, but if you provide a permit for it, I still have a problem with it up there. If you're talking about fire and...
Now, this doesn't allow anyone just to go build a fire in the park. They have to have a special event permit to have a recreational fire. So we wouldn't issue that permit unless we felt secure in doing so.
I guess my question part is, what is the process right now?
So right now, they can contact our office, and we'll give them an application, and they fill it out and saying what they want to do. And then at that point, we review that application. If there's a fire, we may contact the public safety, the police chief, and the fire chief to talk to them about their concerns. We haven't had a lot of proposals wanting to do fires. If you recall, the Ganook family approached the city council about having a fire in Marine Park. And so that's a very lengthy process that has to go through the Park and Cemetery Board. It comes to city council to take your guys' time. So we just basically wanted to simplify that process. So that's what that is. We wouldn't be granting special event permits to have big fires in Marine Park, or any fires for that matter. Unless there was some, they were able to demonstrate that it was a good reason, and that all the safety precautions are going to be taken.
If I can just address one aspect of this, I guess the consumption of alcohol. When I was living in Los Angeles, Descanso Gardens in La Cañada and the Los Angeles Arboretum in Pasadena do have concerts in the evening where people bring their picnics with alcohol, and they have been a roaring success and have brought people into the parks. And as long as it's under control and it's cleaned up, it again uses the parks and brings people into the parks if they want to come back on a non-concert night.
I totally agree. I mean, we had discussions like that at the Park and Cemetery Board.
Further, who provides the oversight once this has been signed and a special permit has been granted? Who goes out there and, let's say I'm exceeding what is required in the permit, who goes out there? Is that the police department or is that some city official that would go out and say, hey, Robinson, you're not doing what you said you were supposed to do in the permit?
It would likely be the police department. We provide, we collect all the personal contact information like cell phone numbers and everything like that. We provide it to the police department. So if there was something occurring that shouldn't be going on, the police department has a direct contact to call that person right away and make sure that gets corrected. Or alternatively, CDS staff can do that as well, depending on what time these events are occurring. But police provides 24-hour oversight. So.
Yes, Steve.
And Alex, correct me if I'm wrong. Anything to do with alcohol, the Washington State Liquor Control Board is involved too, with a banquet permit of any sort or whatever, something like that.
That's completely correct, sir. Yeah.
Further questions, Ralph? Hearing none. Staff concurs with the city, with the Park and Cemetery Board's recommendation to adopt 162890, amending the Blaine Municipal Code, Chapter 12.32, City Parks. So what we're being requested is to adopt Ordinance 16-2890.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Are there further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nope.
So the motion is carried 5-0. And it's absent.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Okay, now we're down to commission, committee, and board reports. First item is the Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee. Mr. City Manager.
Just a brief report, Mayor, that we had a meeting last week. We didn't have a full quorum, but we did have a presentation by Tom Beckwith, bringing the group up to speed with what current survey results are and information. The next meeting is the first part of October.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. City Manager. Now, Steve Lawrenson for the Blaine Tourism and Advisory Committee.
We have a meeting tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. to continue working on the grant process.
Okay. WTA Board, Mr. Greenall.
We're continuing to hash out the service change proposals. There will be a public hearing to discuss these sometime early in October. All, of course, will be welcome, and I'll give you a specific time, date, and place closer to the event.
Thank you. Drayton Harbor Shellfish Advisory Committee, Charlie.
Meeting on the 21st at the library.
21st, okay. Dennis, your three committees, library, senior center, and Boys and Girls Club.
No reports.
You. Planning Commission, Mr. Jones.
No report from the Planning Commission, and the Park and Cemetery Board was all just up on the agenda.
Thank you. Raven.
No, that's not quite true. Alex is correcting me.
Oh. Now reporting for the Parks and Cemetery Board.
Just real quick, I did want to give you a report on a couple of park things going on. The you may have seen. California, and they're going to bring their A team up to redo the design, and I think it should be a big improvement down there. We also completed all the irrigation work in Marine Park, and we've also had a professional landscape plan done to provide physical separation between the playground and the parking and the travel lanes down there, so we're going to be planning some strategically placed landscaping in there to try to keep kids from running out into the street, and also working on a little railing a rope and post railing to provide some separation as well. And all the playground plaques are all installed down there. And the city is planning the end of summer celebration on Saturday, September 24th, from 1 to 4 p.m. There'll be live music and some food vendors down there, and we want to have a little donation recognition ceremony. So that should be a very fun event. And I just wanted to let you know about that going on in Marine Park. Also, the skate park is currently being reconstructed. There is an article in the Northern Light about that, but I just wanted to give you a little more information. That wasn't our capital improvement program for this year, so we had the opportunity to purchase the City of Covington's skate park equipment through the government surplus site, and then we had to do some quick repairs to it and had that moved back up here, but that is being reassembled as we speak, or earlier today, I should say. I'm hoping that the park will all be put back together possibly by the end of next week, or maybe stretching into at least before your next council meeting, I should say. And we're hoping to have a grand reopening Friday after school at 3 p.m. on Saturday, September 30th. So that's a couple weeks away at least, but I'm hoping to have the park open before then. Any questions about either of those park projects?
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you.
Okay, Raven, on the Public Works Advisory Committee.
I'm just going to speak on this for Raven. We discussed basically two main areas we just wanted to keep at the forefront. One is the ongoing assessment of the power rates. And again, Raven talked about this weatherization program, which fits into power conservation, because we're looking at the Bonneville rates and the tier level, and we want to try and keep ourselves in tier one. The question then becomes, if we do get some commercial enterprises in Blaine that are big power users, and we did mention grow-ups, are we going to then charge them a different rate? And so we argued the benefits of charging commercial more rates versus discouraging commercial coming to Blaine. So we're keeping an eye on that. The other thing that Bill Bullock and I wanted to get up on the agenda is this whole thing of emergency preparedness and try and get it more consolidated. And he's working, and Public Works is working at that level. Bill, in particular, being a master super scout, has his own emergency kit, which he showed us talking about it. And then I presented, which I've been working on in some of the neighborhoods, is map your neighborhood. In other words, the people living in the houses in Blaine, what are they going to do for the 72 hours or longer before the emergency services get to them? And we're trying to coordinate both from above and from below to meet together, where we communicate so that the city knows what's going on in the individual neighborhoods and the neighborhood knows what the city is doing for them, and meet together in the middle.
Thank you. Small Cities Caucus, there's a meeting on Tuesday of next week. Finance Committee.
No report, but I will be scheduling a meeting soon as we get into the budget planning season.
That time again?
Again.
Okay, Whatcom Council of Governments, there's a meeting this Wednesday. And
Henry.
Best but last, Mr. Chief Hollander.
Evening, Council. Sorry I was late. We had a rather large brush fire today. I had to evacuate a bunch of homes out of the Bell Air Trailer Park. Wow. So there's my rooted weather. We're good. Sorry. The fire's out. Everybody's safe. No damage. So that was good news. I'm giving you a copy of our responder, which has a nice bio of Leslie Smith. You all know Leslie Smith. Yes. Really nice story about her in there. And a good recipe that we all like. Some back-to-school information. And then a list of all our CPR classes that will be given this year. There's one scheduled for every month. That's about that. And then a few meetings ago, the question came up on the EMS levy that's coming up on the ballot in November.
And what I would like to do, if it works, is bring a council member from the EMS Levy Committee to your council meeting and put them on the agenda. Would that be appropriate? To make a presentation to you?
Yes, sir.
So what I gave you tonight was basically a fact sheet with questions and answers so you can familiarize yourself, and then he will make a presentation at the meeting we'll schedule down the road, and then you can ask him any questions, and that way we eliminate the middleman and make sure we get you all the accurate information. That sounds appropriate?
Yes.
Okay. And lastly, I just want to thank the mayor for his speech on yesterday at the 911 service. Well done. Thank you.
I thought it was terrific.
Pardon me?
I thought the whole event was terrific.
Thank you. A lot of work by a lot of committee members, and
it's a wonderful event.
It's always a special event. It is.
And Como did a nice job on it.
Yeah.
It was very well done.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, now we're going to department reports. First report is from the Public Works, and we want a project update.
Great. Try to keep it short and sweet. So our Mitchell Avenue project, handrails finally going in tomorrow. It's been kind of just a status on getting things powder coated and scheduled and all of that good stuff. And then the landscaping, the final landscaping will follow that. And I'm assured that'll happen before the end of the month. Our chip seal project was completed in a day. So you literally awarded it last meeting, and they started, so Monday, they started on Wednesday, and they were done Wednesday night. To say that we were pleased is probably the biggest understatement, because if this were done by others, and I won't mention names, we would have been in these areas with a concrete road, or excuse me, with a gravel road for a week until things got, you know, compacted and whatnot. No, they ran compactors over, they swept it up, and they even gave us all of the gravel left over. So we very well might like to do this as an annual program. Usually I hear chip seal. Anyway, well field project, brought to our attention that there might be some of you that would like a well field tour. So if that's something that you're interested, let me know so we know whether we need to publicize it and, you know, can figure out travel and all of that. The other thing that was suggested is maybe incorporating well 8.1, because that's one that we recently finished in Lincoln Park. Unless you want to show me hands, that would help too. Okay, I got two, maybe three. Okay. Okay, I suspect some of you have seen it before, so I got Steve, Mary, Paul, Mary. Okay. Thank you on that. Well, while I'm taking a show of hands, one of the things that we have been doing has been talking with WSDOT every other week on various topics, and actually started out being very different than how it's turning out, but because we were actually asking them to come up and do a study session with you, and this is kind of how it's resolved. But it's actually, I think, been good in a lot of ways because we're communicating with them more, which is always a good thing when you have. Anyway, I'm kind of rambling on. The issue regarding the speed and the street name on 543 has been one of the things that we have been talking about. And I guess we would like to know from you where your thoughts are on that so that we would know what to bring forward to you. I think that based on conversations with the police chief that we will be doing some kind of request. That's the other thing, is that they want us to provide a written request for whatever it is we're asking. We would probably on a staff level be open to requesting a speed change, whatever that might be. And the whole school zone thing is relatively out of our control, but we're asking them for a written opinion on that. So the last part of that in terms of us moving forward is the name. And are, do any of you feel really strongly about adding a name to SR 543? It would not be instead of 543. That's always going to be the state's name for the truck route. It would be similar to East Badger Road 544. I think it is Grandview Road 548. The difference being Grandview Road and Badger Road or Grandview Road and Badger Road before the state made it into a highway, and this is the opposite. So, again, this would need to be initiated by us to them.
Okay. Not. Why are they concerned with a name change?
You should talk into your microphones.
Yeah, the question was, why are they concerned about a name change? They're not.
Well, what?
This is coming from us, based on a citizen coming to you, and we're trying to do the follow-through on that. So,
okay, I see where you're going.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
The thing, Dennis, I guess the question she's asking is, are you in favor of a name change, and if so, what would it be?
I think that would be the problem as to what it would be.
Right. I think the request was something like school road or whatnot. So.
A little slow today. School road would be good.
Not resonating with anybody.
Name?
Can I suggest we bring this back to a council's agenda item and you can have full discussion?
Yeah. I think that'd be appropriate.
Can do that. Okay. And then we already talked a little bit about the Public Works Advisory Committee, so thank you, Councilmember Stewart. And just to let you know that the experience at the Public Works Conference with Councilmember Stewart was just outstanding. I think she and I not only got to know each other better, I think her seeing all the different elements of Public Works was positive, and the reception that we were getting from the colleagues there was so positive. So I think, you know, there's something there that should be pursued, and in if they offer that again, I will ask and hope that one of you would also take me up on that. And then, you know, just to kind of encourage you, not only on in a national public works organization, but even on your local level, getting involved with AWC or something like that, where you're getting to interact with other people at your level is just so important. I am proud to say that at the meeting I was tested and passed the certification for Public Works Executive, which is something that they is specific to this organization. There are less than 70 of us in an organization of 29,000. So I feel very fortunate. It was pretty nerve-wracking to be tested by your peers. I actually had a pre-test by Councilmember Stewart, and that was appreciated, too. That's all I have.
I have a comment. The new turnaround for the buses getting onto Mitchell Street is really way better. It's way better.
Wonderful.
The driver's really happy about that. So, anyway, tell Bill that, please.
I will do so.
Okay.
Community Development Services. Midterm Development Report.
It's a little late in the year for a mid-year development report, but that's
what it says.
I know, but that's what it is. You're right. We're in the middle of bringing on new staff and kind of a flurry of development activity this week. It's up here on the screen. I'll run through our mid-year report. You have the development summary in your packet, so it has some of the information. It's this blue and white sheet. We have 16 new dwelling units approved in the mid-year up until the end of June, and a lot more development activity since then, which I'll mention here in a moment, but there are 15 new single-family homes and one accessory dwelling unit. Up until this time last year, there were 10, so
it's still a substantial increase over the year before. This is that 10 years in review, kind of decade in review thing. You can see in 2006, one of the, well, the last year of the housing boom, 96 units approved that year, and we've been kind of rolling around 40 as a high since then. Of those 96 units, interestingly enough, 18 of those units were also applied for this year. Those were Marin Building 3, which didn't get completed in 2006, but has been applied for after the June 30th cutoff for this report. So that's some of our other other additional dwelling units that are going to be on the books here soon. Most of the new construction in those residential units is out on Semiahmoo-Spit. 10 single-family homes. They're actually duplexes, but they're permitting all of them as single-family homes, so that's how they end up in our tracking. So they're permitting them as two single-family homes joined together. It's complicated, but what it allows them to do is get a final occupancy on one if they're still finishing up in the other one, and it allows them to do things like let their buyers select countertops and paint colors and things like that on the second unit and not have to have all of that done before people move in to the unit next door. Here's a development snapshot of a project in progress. This is out on Wood Duck Loop in Semiahmoo. It's a 4,000 square foot home at a development value. This is our highest construction value in the first half of the year at about $600,000. So far this year, we have just under $6 million in residential construction value. As you can see from the pie chart there, it's almost exclusively residential. That's going to change dramatically next time we give you this report, and it's going to be almost exclusively non-residential, and that's because the high school is now going to be added to that list. And so the $6 million worth will turn into about $42 or $43 or $45 million, depending upon how much other construction there is. The bond measure that you're probably aware of is for a lot of other things. It's not just the building, so it won't all end up on this chart. But that's actually a pretty significant bump up over the past couple of years, even when we don't include those things that have happened after June. So $6 million up until June of this year, $3 million last year, and a couple million the year before. About $3 million the year before as well. The development activity is still pretty high for other things. So these are miscellaneous items, just things like somebody wants to put in a new furnace or like a new hot water heater and such. And those are 69 permits have been submitted, and that's the same kind of activity we've seen before in the past few years during the recession. That was the majority of the work was that kind of activity. Now that we are climbing out of that, we have that as well as the new construction, which means building inspections are on the increase. We had 385 building inspections conducted, single-handedly conducted by Cliff, I will point out, since he was the only one on staff for most of that time. And that's up from 266 in the same period last year. Here's another development snapshot. This one's also out in Semiahmoo on Shearwater Road, which is in the Boundary Ridge subdivision. This is the second highest construction value at about $438,000, 3,300 square foot home tucked in the woods there. As a result of all that development activity, building revenue is projected to we have reached 80% of projected building permit revenue, and we have exceeded by 200% or so in the land use. The land is always a really challenging one because if you have one subdivision come in that you didn't think was going to happen, you're way over the books. And if you have one subdivision not come in that you thought was going to happen, then you're way under. So Jeff and I struggle with that, on what numbers to project, but land use permitting activity is way up. And in fact, we have a couple other plats that are likely to come in, so it's entirely possible that that figure will be, instead of the 9,500 budgeted, we may easily be at $45,000 or $50,000. Not that that's a huge difference, but in the budget overall, but in that one particular category, it is. So this explains why we're so busy
in our office from the planning perspective. It may not seem like it from your end, and it may not seem like it from the Planning Commission's end, but if you look at the 2016 permit line on the top of that chart there, we had 29 administrative permits. Those are things like short plats, site plan reviews, and things that we approve and review on an administrative level, which are sometimes very complicated and time-consuming. Only 4 permits went to the Planning Commission, and only 3 permits came to you, and those are, of course, in addition to the 29 that we were processing administratively. So we're running like gerbils down there and canceling Planning Commission meetings, which makes it look like not a whole lot is happening, but a whole lot is happening. Here's another one of our development snapshots. This is in one of those duplexes down on Semiahmoo Split on Turnstone Lane, and those are big buildings. This one has almost 6,000 square feet within it, the two units combined. And they just continue to pull more permits on those, and things are really changing pretty dramatically down there. Land use permits are, we've only labeled the type 2 permits, those which have gone to Planning Commission and or City Council. The others, if we labeled the 29, there'd be nothing but labels on the map. You wouldn't be able to see it. There's a cell tower down on the Wharf District that is still in a incomplete status. They're struggling with that one, but the Lookout on Mitchell is a conditional use permit for multifamily down at the end of Mitchell at the corner of Peace Portal and Mitchell. That was approved by the Planning Commission. Dakota Creek Apartments came in as a complete application. We began processing it, and then they withdrew that, so that doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And then the Resort Semiahmoo Zone 3, which is also known as Sea Smoke now, is currently at the Planning Commission. It had a public hearing over the last couple meetings and will be going to a study session and possibly a decision at this next meeting. So before I move on, I wanted to just refer you to the bottom of that chart that, or the summary that you have there. As I mentioned, the 10-year comparison that was up on the chart earlier, I mentioned that 18 of those units were actually part of the 96 units from 2006. So if we add those 18 units and the single family homes and other permits that have been received for multifamily, up until the last time we did a count, which was August 25th, there were 65 units. So that 30 that was on the chart that you saw is already more than doubled. And I'm sure since August 25, we've probably added a few more. Similarly, as I mentioned, the high school is in, but we have three other commercial projects that have come in. They're not really big. The high school blows everything else off the charts, but it's quite a bit of other activity. This is a summary for our enforcement cases in 2016. If you read the table from left to right, so the total number of cases that have been processed, there's a variety of different types, but there are 98 of those. The majority of those, 73, have been resolved. And even some of the more complicated ones, like dangerous buildings, those have been resolved. But a number of those still remain outstanding. Some of them are working towards resolution. 8 of the dangerous buildings or nuisance properties are working towards resolution. And that means they have an action plan in place with us, and they're taking steps and making progress. There are 5 which we've issued notices of violation on, which have gone to the hearing examiner for a hearing already or are going to the hearing examiner for a hearing soon. In one instance, we have someone going back to the hearing examiner for a second time, basically because they didn't work cooperatively with us. When we issued a notice, they didn't respond. They went to the hearing examiner, were found in violation, and were given a time period for compliance and a fine, and then they didn't comply with that. So now we're going back to report and saying, well, they didn't do what they were required to do. We need permission to go on the property and tear down the building or correct the situation. So some of those, they take time. They're difficult. And some of those are the most obvious. The Rocky Mountain Trading building down by the Shell station at exit 274 is on the list. Mr. Dobie, who owns that property, owns 3 properties, and all 3 of those are on our list. And he has a finding by the hearing examiner for a action plan. To date, we see no action, which means he may be one where we're going back and requesting
permission to go on the property and take action. I will say those become expensive because that means the city needs to pay for those things to occur. We do, of course, get that money back in a lien, but it's like putting money in the bank, never knowing when you're going to get to withdraw it. So we're hoping that they'll take action on their own rather than investing citizens' money, but it is a worthwhile investment. It's just one of those things. So we're moving forward on a number of those still. I would mention, you remember the fines that we asked you to impose, and they were substantial, and some of you expressed some concern about that, $250 a day, recurring day after day after day. So we went to the hearing examiner with some things that were pretty substantial fines, and in every case, the hearing examiner has substantially reduced those fines. So we've had, I think it's 5 cases at the hearing examiner, or 4 cases at the hearing examiner, and the fines have only been required at a total of $5,500. So he's being very considerate of people taking action, although I have a feeling when we come back around with people who haven't taken action, those fines may substantially increase. So the fines are working in making people pay attention, and I think the hearing examiner is being very considerate of not being overburdensome with those. Any questions on any of the enforcements? I know that's a lot of information.
So how come it seems to be working for the small person in Blaine, but it doesn't seem to be working for the guy that's got all the money that can afford to do this stuff?
Yeah.
We get reimbursed or we put a lien against his property, but is there not a daily fine that keeps adding up?
There's a daily fine that keeps accruing. The hearing examiner has the ability to reduce that fine based upon a variety of circumstances and taking into consideration. So the fines in many instances have been reduced, but it's reduced upon a condition that the person comply. So if the person doesn't comply, those fines would be back under consideration again. So some of those fines may go way up. Why it works seems to work well for a lot of folks, but not for some of what you call the bigger property owners. I can't say for sure, to be honest with you, but I think to some degree it's because they don't feel that it's as important. If I'm calling you personally about your personal home that you live in, it's much more real. If I'm calling you about an investment property you own in another city and or another country, it may not seem as significant to you, but that just means that we need to put more energy into those.
So how do you make it more
significant? Council member, would you please speak into the mic?
So how do you make it more significant?
Well, how do we make it more significant is the second time around we get more fines levied. It's difficult. We don't get to do that. We go into the hearing examiner process and say there's $17,500 worth of fines owed as of today, and $642 in staff time plus the hearing examiner's fees of $200 an hour, and so he's aware of that. And then typically the person will explain their reasons that the property is in the condition that it is and their plan for moving forward, and he's been responsive to those plans and taking that into consideration. And in some instances, they've been really good, and they've complied. One example of that is at the end of 4th Street here. There's a green house that's owned by Dr. Chen and a partner. And that one has been eaten by blackberries for a long time and had a lot of broken windows. And that's really all. It doesn't look great, I'll give you that, but it complies with the code. It's all been cleaned up. The vegetation's gone. He paid a fine, and it worked. And he's an investor. It's not someone who just lives there. But some of the other property owners, they're taking a little bit more time. So here's one more development snapshot. This is on Ruby Lane, which is just up the street from Mr. Hawkins.
It's giant.
And
two stories now.
It's two stories now. You can see it, actually, when you're driving down Peace Portal Drive because it's right by the water. 3,400 square feet, third highest construction value at about $430,000. And we wanted to tell you about this because it's interesting, not because it happened before June and not because it would usually be on the development report. This is a piece of a shoreline restoration plan for the Semiahmoo Shore project, which is formerly Seagrass. This is for the side of the property that faces on Semiahmoo Bay. And that property, I'm not sure if you know, but that property was the receiving area, sort of the tailings receiving area for when they dredged the marina And so the marina used to be shallow water, now it's deep water. All that material came up on land, and it went into these big settling ponds. And they were dug in different places on Semiahmoo Spit. Some of the largest ones were here. So it raised the elevation of that property by about 4 to 6 feet or more. What that did was on the Semiahmoo Bay side, it created sort of an erosional bluff. So if you go towards the park, or if you go towards Beachwalker, there's a natural back beach with dune grasses, and there's logs and a variety of different things. On that particular property, you're walking along. You're about 5 feet above the beach, and there's a little cliff next to you. So they asked for and received approval to do a beach restoration project to modify the landscape out there. And so they are basically re-landscaping and rebuilding the old beach profile. It's happening right now. And, well, again, much like something that was mentioned before, it's happened earlier today. I'm sure they're not working now. But so this is what it looks like now. Well, these pictures are from today. Those logs were all imported. The vegetation that you see in that picture is the old edge of the beach. The little cliff used to be like right where the disturbed earth starts. So this is all happening above the ordinary high water mark. And they're putting back in the angle of the beach as it existed before all the fill was added. And then the fill material, they're moving back into the site to create berms and modify the slope. We're bringing in 100 or more logs, reestablishing the trail, which is right there. You can see it on that picture. And basically recreating the old beach profile. This is what it looks like from down at the park end. Then it'll all be re-landscaped. And reseeded with beach grasses and things on the downhill side, and the trail will be put back in place. So, of course, it's being monitored for archaeological resources, but none were expected to be encountered because it's fill material. But you never know exactly what's happened under there or exactly how deep they're going to go and where the old grade was, so that's all being monitored. But it's honestly, it's really cool. It's just a really interesting project, and they did that for a couple reasons. They wanted to remove the erosion, the visible erosion there, I think, for sales purposes. It looks a little scary buying property where there's an erosional bluff right there. But also, it makes it a much more inviting beach environment. And it also has the pedestrians about 3 feet lower than they would have been before, so they're not walking like by your windows looking in. So I think there's a lot of reasons to do it. But what I love about it is it brings back that old beach profile that was there before, and it's now much more usable than it was before. So that is all I have on the development activity. And one more thing on the agenda there. I wanted to take a moment to introduce Tim Woodard. He is the city's new building official. Tim comes to us from the city of Boise. With his tenure there, he progressed from the plans examiner one position up the ranks to become the assistant building official. Tim has 8 International Code Council certifications in all areas of residential and commercial construction. He's reviewed several large development projects there, including 2 high-rise buildings currently under construction in Boise. Tim's been a leader among his peers in serving as the president of his local IACC chapter, the president of the Energy Code Ambassador Program, and he was awarded the Building Inspector and Plans Examiner of the Year in 2013 by the Idaho Association of Building Officials. We're really pleased to have Tim on staff, and he's been here about a month. Doing a great job. And I just wanted to take a moment so Tim could come in and say hi and see you folks.
Welcome, Tim.
Thank you. My family and I are really happy to be here. I have a wife and 2 children. We did a lot of research on where we wanted to end up and where we wanted to raise our kids. So they're 6 and 8 years old. And, we're starting at Blaine School District, and we're happy to be here too. And hope for great things here. Thanks.
Thank you, Tim. Okay, next we have is finance.
I just have a brief comment. The state auditors will be on site. Actually, they are on site, conducting their standard audit of the city's finances. And typically, they send an email out to council announcing their arrival, so you should be seeing something from them within the next couple of days.
Safety, chief is not here.
I have a question about the public safety. Harold had an article in the paper on Sunday about a couple cities getting away from having those cameras, best cameras, because of the long-term costs. And I'm wondering, how are we getting ourselves into something that maybe because of that, that we...
I'll address that when I do my report.
Oh, okay.
I'll do that.
Okay. Administrative services.
No report.
Mr. City Manager.
So I'll address that question about body cams. I've been concerned about those too, not so much from the data storage side of it, although I think that's really big. It's more from a public disclosure point of view. And, you know, we haven't fully implemented those cameras. Mike has been carrying one around, trying different models, and, you know, taking a look at them. I suggested very strongly, in fact, directed him to make sure that we have a council discussion about body cams before we fully implement. I think the council needs to weigh in on, you know, what those things mean to the city of Blaine. So, for example, if you happen to be calling a 911 call, the fire department responds, the police department responds, it could be an aid call, it could be a safety call. You go into people's homes, those body cams are fully activated, there's going to be children, there could be medical issues, there could be just a litany of problems going on in that home that really have nothing to do with the call for service. It could be completely legitimate activities that family doesn't want to be on YouTube. Because everything that we do, for the most part, is going to be discoverable or to be public record. So how do you go about sorting out thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of footage to comply with the public records request for 3.5 minutes of video on some particular day or year, or about a particular individual? Our clerk is the one that's responsible for managing public records. She told me today she finally closed out a public records request that took her 10 months to complete. So these are big, big concerns that the city council, I think, needs to talk about, not just storage, which is going to be a big question, but also what does it mean to the city's public safety program. So I read that same article, and I wasn't at all surprised. I think you're going to see many, many cities reevaluating it, not because of disclosure. I don't think we're at all concerned about transparency. It's really about just managing that system. It's so new, and there's no way that I know of to black out people's faces with a little black bar across their eyes, right? That's how do you create privacy with a video? And there's lots of good reasons for privacy, and completely legitimate reasons. So we'll keep you tuned up on that before we do anything serious.
Thank you.
You bet. So my report's going to be somewhat brief, but I did want to tell you that the signs for the Gateway property are now installed. I have just a copy, and I'll hand them to you just so you can pass them around. Or if you want to keep one, let me know. They're doing the marketing now for the property. It's been sent out to all across the United States and Canada. And so we're hoping for some more activity. We have sent out a package to a company in Toronto. It's a food processor. I followed up with them today and I haven't heard back, but that's a possibility of a large manufacturer coming in. That Eugene Klein presented a similar proposal to a company that needs well over 100 acres of property. So now there's a kind of a concept of combining multiple properties into a consolidated approach. So, you know, I'm optimistic we're going to make some progress and keep moving forward. I think there's, you know, as the United States economy it gets better, as you can see from housing starts, I think there's also interest in our Canadian neighbors as well. So I'll just share these with you, and you can take a look. And feel free to, if you want to keep a copy, let me know, and I'll get one to you. So a couple other things. You know, Jeff mentioned the budget's coming up. We are going to be having workshops. The big challenge this year is going to be the sense of prosperity with the school's bond issue. there's a lot of one-time money that's going to be available for the city council to utilize for various programs. And we're going to certainly have conversations about that. There's things that we're going to suggest that you invest in. There are going to be programs and activities that you yourselves would like to move forward with. The problem with the money is that it's one time. It's a big boost because of the sales tax revenue from the school bond. So we'll be talking a lot more about that. We've been working on some personnel issues and getting prepared for labor negotiations. If you can imagine, they're just around the corner. There's going to be a session or two or 10 this fall for salary adjustments for 2017. And then starting in 2017, we're going to start looking at a whole new contract cycle. So that's coming up. Other than that, we're very doing well, I think. We are delighted to have Tim here. I think he's a great addition. We also had some other great activities. I think on Friday you had an open house, a picnic with your staff. So we're doing some things I think are positive, and I think we're looking forward to 2017. Any questions?
Getting any crap? Are you getting any crap?
I am. Right. Been a good season.
Yeah. Thank you. Sherry, are their calendars okay?
So far as I know, they're up to date.
Okay. Is there any unfinished business? Any council new business? Yes, Mary Lou.
I just want to go back to a bit of unfinished business and just add my kudos to Raven. The presentation she did at the convention was very skilled, and she got very, very good positive feedback. In addition to a plaque, she was on stage with many of the award winners that afternoon, and she's been very quiet about it, but she really did an outstanding job, and she deserves our congratulations. So.
Thank you. Dennis, did you have something that you wanted to add on new business?
Yeah. I'd like to propose that Mitchell Avenue be designated as a school route. And the reason for that is the majority of the school traffic is on that street, the buses, the parents' vehicles, and the kids. And there's no indication that the school is present until a sign at the I-5 underpass. There are no crosswalks on Mitchell except the Peace Portal and at the school property. And there is a fair amount of traffic that uses Mitchell to get to Senior Center. But I think there should be some way to indicate when people start up Mitchell that this is the school route basically for a lot of kids and parents in Blaine.
We can look at the criteria for that and come back to you.
Okay, if not, I'll bring the meeting to a close at 7:53.
You can't get it.